Hello, it's Richard Herring here. Welcome to my podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. And my stand-up tour is about to begin. Can I have my ball back? First stand-up tour in 6 years. Many of you just know me from the podcast. Don't know, I've done 14 or 15 stand-up tours in my own right. I'm a brilliant stand-up comedian, and can I have my ball back? I think it's my best show ever. That's what the audiences are saying. It's about testicular cancer, but it's funny because testicles are funny even though cancer isn't. I'm really pleased with it. I'd love you to come and see it. Bring your friends. Some of the shows selling really well, some of them selling really badly. It's a traditional Richard Herring tour. But here's where I'm going to be. 2nd of May, Thursday at the Luton Hat Factory. It's a small venue, but there are still tickets left. 3rd of May, I'm at the Bury Hedge End, which is near Southampton. That's looking more full, but still some availability. 8th of May, I'm at the Leicester Square Theatre. There's about 10 tickets left for that one, though I am back at the Leicester Square Theatre in June. And then I'm at St Albans on the 9th, Gloucester on the 10th, Chorley Little Theatre on the 11th. That's sold out, but you can join the waiting list. And then the 12th of May, I'm at Glasgow. Afternoon show sold out. Evening show, extra show, put on, still with tickets. And then there's lots more. Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs. And now, enjoy whatever podcast I've given you. It's free. It's all for you. If you want to pay me back, buy a book, come and see a show. That's all I've got to say to you. Love you.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello, my fine friends. It's me, Richard Herring, with another Rahalasta Pa. We're at the York Grand Opera House with David Reed, who's does lots of podcasts, The Penny Dreadfuls, stand-up, just releasing a new audio sci-fi thing with Radio 4. It's very exciting. He's doing the York pantomime. None of this comes up in the podcast. He wasn't very well, but he got through it. I hope you enjoy all these. There's loads more to come. And we are doing live ones. Go to richardherring.com/rahalastapata/tour or richardherring.com/gigs and you can find out if we're coming near to you. Still a very few tickets left for Birmingham on March the 28th. Nearly got the guests nailed down for that one. Most of the London ones selling okay. First one sold out. Second one with Parapod is selling surprisingly fast. I didn't think anyone would want to see that one. We will have a proper guest as well. So don't worry if you don't like Ian Boldsworth. He's very sexist and Barry Dodds. Anyway, let's sit back, relax and enjoy Rahalasta Patata with David Reed. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Grand Opera House in York. Please welcome a man who just got put a bet on and got the right score and everything, but he cashed out too soon, the idiot. It's Richard Herring. Thank you very much. Hello, York. It's good to be home. It's good to be home. I've forgotten I'd written this. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome. It's lovely to be here. Welcome to Richard Herring's Lubricating Sabre-Toothed Tigers podcast. I'd written that in the car on the way up. You've got to come up with new ideas for podcasts. There's too many just two blokes talking to each other, isn't it? We've had enough of that. So what the podcast is now, I'm going to genetically engineer extinct prehistoric animals and then turn them on, see if I can turn them on. Get them lubricated, then fuck them with a guest. It's, I don't know if the guests have realised that. So it's not just going to be saber-toothed tigers. That's just the title. But I was hanging out at the Jorvik Viking Centre. I love going there because you can do farts in there and just then say it's a smell from the olden days. That's why. If you'd be smart while he farts today, that would be, you'd find that doubly funny. And a man dressed as an animatronic slave trader said he calls it Rahalastabus. I don't know if that's... It wasn't, was it? It wasn't a man. He was an animatronic slave trader. Is having sex with an animatronic Viking still cheating? That's the question I would ask you, York. It's very exciting today. I was hoping to go to the match. I'm a York City supporter, as I'm sure everyone here is. And then they moved the game a little bit later. But I unusually decided to bet on the score, and I bet it would be 2-0 to York. And it was 2-0 to York, but it was 2-0 to York pretty quickly, so I cashed out a bit too soon, losing. I lost £90. I'm not going to bang on about it, just because I talked about it before we started as well. It is great to be in York. I have been to Leicester during this tour, which I did reluctantly. They stole our bones. And I tried to get there. Tried to get the bones back from them. They wouldn't let me take the bones back. King Richard III's bones were not coming back. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to wait till Gary Lineker dies, and then I'm going to bury him under the car park in Tanner Row, and you know the one. And we'll use that as a bargaining chip. It's Richard of York, isn't it? It's not Richard of Leicester. Richard, there's a clue in his name. Can't do that with a rainbow, can you? Richard of Leicester gave battle in veins. Red, orange, lavender. It's not going to... Can't change. That's the people of Leicester. They want to unweave the rainbow. That's what they want to do. That's the cleverest Keats joke you're going to hear during today's show. Let's see if I've got any. I've got quite... I'll give you a couple of York facts. Guy Fawkes went to school in York. Do you know that in St. Peter's School? He went, done the most damage to Parliament. That school done the most damage to Parliament until for 400 years, and then it's Eton now. that's my one. That's enough jokes for you this week. We've had enough. Let's not go crazy. So, my guest this week, he's probably best known for two things. He's the second most famous comedian who supports York City. And the level of the first most famous is quite low, so we don't need to get too excited. He's probably best known, though, and why we're here tonight, because he played Seb McDonald in Doctors, didn't he? That's why we love Doctors here, don't we, in New York? And that's why we've come. Will you please welcome David Reed, ladies and gentlemen? It's David Reed. Come in, sit down, make yourself at home.
Ooh. Thank you.
It's the first time I sat down in these chairs, they're quite tight. I'm not sure the beast will be able to sit in this chair comfortably. We'll see. That's for next week. We'll get new chairs for next week. We've got plenty of time. So, hello, David. How are you? Well, you're not very well.
I'm not very well, no.
Okay, thank you for coming in.
I know it's polite to say, oh, I'm doing brilliantly. Yeah, no, thank you. But I've been struggling with food poisoning for the entire day. But I thought I'd brave it out here and hopefully not add extra pyrotechnics to your podcast.
We are filming it, so it would be quite good.
You said it'd be quite good.
Yeah, well, as long as it's not me. So usually it's me who's got food poisoning or about to have it, so I'm delighted it's someone else.
Oh, thanks, man.
Good luck. If you know, we got a signal. We said we'd work out a signal if we need to. Maybe some kind of winking eye. Winking eye.
Do we need the winking with it? Not sure we do.
Well, I hope we get through it, OK? What do you remember about playing Seb McDonald in Doctors?
Seb McDonald in Doctors. Yeah, that was.
I think Seb McDonald. Not McDonald. Yeah, I think he was called McDonald.
Was there no D in it?
I don't think so.
I knew I'd played him wrong. I remember actually being quite excited because I'd not done drama before.
Right. Was that your first role?
Not technically. Right. I played the comedian Peter Cook in a drama.
I was going to ask you about
that. So I wasn't sure if that was drama or comedy, really.
Right.
Hard to tell. But, Seb McDonald, it was called Ring of Truth, the episode.
Okay. It sounds like it could be quite apt for what you're going.
Yeah, and
problems.
And I was playing opposite an actress from York, actually.
Oh, yes.
Twinnie Lee Moore, who's also a country singer. Okay. And I proposed to her in the opening scene, and then the same day, her husband gets released from prison. And then we bump into each other in a pub, and he sees that my my lock screen on my phone is his wife.
Wow.
And we have a fight in a car park.
Wow. Oh, good.
It's quite a good episode.
Yeah.
And in the end, she throws both her engagement ring and her wedding ring down the drain.
Wow.
I'm just like, what a waste of money. She was a nurse. She's not earning a lot.
Okay.
She could have pawned those.
So she was the nurse in the doctors. Do you watch Doctors, everyone, when you're off work? Or if you're retired. Some of you are retired. Or, you know, comedians. I watch it all the time.
It's mostly for us.
So. Yeah. So you weren't, didn't go into... It wasn't because you've been beaten up that you went to the doctor's surgery. You were trying to...
I was a doctor.
Oh, you were a doctor.
I was a doctor,
okay.
Yes.
For one episode.
For one episode. They've got a high turnover of doctors at their hospital.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The woman from Game of Thrones, Khaleesi. Whatever she's called.
Was she?
Yeah.
Well, everyone's been in it.
Didn't go on to be on Game of Thrones, did you?
No, I didn't.
Could have been you.
I didn't. They put Kevin Eldon in it twice.
Yeah, I think lots of people have done it twice. And it used to be the bill. If you were a little older, every actor had been in the bill like four times.
It's harder now because the bill doesn't exist.
It is. It's really difficult game.
It's really a lot harder to get on.
Let's talk about your acting. Let's talk about your acting first because you're a multi-talented man and performer.
Thank you.
Let's talk about the Peter Cook. So was the Peter Cook... You were playing opposite David Walliams.
David Walliams was playing Frankie Howard. And I got cast as young Peter Cook, who in his story seems to come in at the sort of end of his career.
Right.
And when Frankie Howard thinks he's sort of done for, you know, nobody's interested anymore and says, you know, I'm a big fan. Why don't you come do my comedy club? But it was the weirdest job I've ever had because I was back home in my front room by 9:30 a.m., having been just powered through this process of going, how do I play Peter Cook? How do it, like, absolute hero of mine.
Yeah.
I guess I do a voice. Luckily, my first line was, hello, I'm Peter Cook. That helped. And the director told me to play it nervous and because he's meeting his hero. So I was like, all right. Hello, I'm Peter Cook. And I got back home, was like, I've never seen Peter Cook nervous in my life. Well, that'll be shit. And it was. It was rubbish.
Well, what was David Walliams like to work with? Was he in
massive
character?
Hands.
Massive hands.
Has he? What, the first thing you think when you shake David Walliams' hand is, they're like oars.
Right.
He should swim the channel. That's what you... No, he was very nice. He was a very nice man. He was interested, you know. Made an effort, you know. And then went off to buy Heat magazine to read, like, the Argos catalogue of women. It was it was rather strange. Just like, oh, I've not met her.
Yes.
Write that down.
In my day, I was interested in women before my wife ruined that.
Were you?
Yeah, and... Okay. But I lunched with David Walliams once, and even I thought, that's a bit much, mate. I mean, like, have a sandwich and just stop for a second. It's lunchtime. Come on, wait till the evening.
He's a devourer, is that what you're saying?
He was a devourer of
sandwiches.
He's
a devourer.
He's a nice guy.
He's a lovely man.
Yeah. Haven't had him on here yet.
Oh. Have you asked?
I haven't asked him, no. Oh, right, But no, that's not to say I won't.
No.
He's very busy.
I've heard he's busy.
Yeah. Like, you're not that busy.
No, I'm not.
You're not as busy.
I have become York's number one podcast guest.
You have?
I've only moved back within the year. And
yes.
I've done three already.
Right. Because, yes, you were born and raised here.
I was.
And now you've moved back here with your new family.
My new family, yes. Yes, I've not moved back here with my parents, who are, I consider, my old family.
Are they nearby your parents?
They literally live next door to me.
That's good. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good babysitting, right? That's why you've done it.
That's what it's for. Also, I like them.
Yeah.
I guess.
That's weird.
Yeah.
That's weird.
Well, it's weird to say you like your parents.
Weird to like them and move next door to them. That's weird.
Is it? No. How far away?
My parents live a good distance away, good long distance. My in-laws live 15 minutes, so we've moved to Hampshire so for the similar reasons to you.
Yes.
But I would not... I love them. I would not like to live next door to my in-laws. I mean, that's a weird thing.
No.
But your wife presumably
does. Yeah, it was her idea.
Okay.
Yeah. I can't understand that. No, Not at all. But no, it seems to be working out.
Yeah. What's so good about York? I mean, I'm from Pocklington, so I don't really like York that much.
Sure. I'm more... Sure, the local derby, yeah. York City Centre.
I saw the Pocklington bus go by as I drove in. 46, I think, to Pocklington. Yeah. Thought I could just hop on that now and go back home like a salmon. Spawn up in the town centre. I presume there's like a statue to me and stuff there.
You've not checked.
I wouldn't go back, you know.
No.
Got to move on.
Well, I haven't.
No.
I'm right back here.
Yeah.
I don't know. I like York. It's yeah. I would have said until yesterday that the food's a lot better than when I grew right. up. But don't go to
never go to
sorry guys.
Never go to never go to
no.
Oof. There's a lot of and I think I might have had a food poisoning from
soon.
Yeah. Not the same one.
Well, it's undeniable what it was, because my wife and I had exactly the same food, apart from a small plate of sausages that I decided I definitely needed
yep.
on the side, and she's vegetarian.
Yeah.
We've been up the entire night and day.
Oh, God.
So, should close, that's what I'm saying.
It's good to get an add-in for them.
Yeah.
We'll take a chance. Go there after the show. Play a bit of Russian roulette.
That's it.
Don't have the sausages. It's as simple as that. So become a vegetarian. It is nice, York. Yeah.
I like it.
Yeah. I like
it. It's got a Minster, hasn't it? And it's got, that it's got three Harry Potter shops now.
That's it.
Despite having nothing to do with Harry Potter whatsoever.
It looks like Harry Potter was filmed here, and that's enough.
That is enough. That is enough. For a lot of people. I served J.K. Rowling coffee once when I lived in Edinburgh.
Okay.
And she did not look me in the eye.
Okay.
So don't get her on.
I won't. I have tried.
Very small hand.
I have tried to get. I've got small hands though, so I don't want a gigantic. I'm scared of Williams now. Because what would he do with those hands?
I think your hand would fit in his palm.
Yeah, I think you'd get four. I think four of my hands in one of his hands.
That's
I reckon.
Four of your hands.
Yeah, my hands are really small.
They're
I've got
not
the smallest.
Small.
They're the smallest hands in show business.
Is that right? Is that on your page?
That is. Including wee Jimmy Cranky, he's got bigger hands than this. Including General Tom Thumb. I'm going back all the way.
All the way.
All the way. in comedy terms...
Yes.
You're possibly best known for being part of the Penny Dreadfuls...
Possibly.
...sketch group.
Yes.
So that was you and Tom Tuck and Humphrey Kerr.
Car. Spelt like
the
vehicle.
Yeah, okay.
Car. Well, it's not spelt like the vehicle.
It's spelt like the Kerr.
It's spelt like the Kerr, like but it's pronounced like the vehicle.
Okay. Yeah. I apologise to
That's
him.
All right. He lives in LA. You can say what you like about him.
I do know that about him. So how did you guys met at university?
Yeah, we went to Edinburgh University together and all basically fell into comedy the same way everybody does, by neglecting our degrees. And then when we graduated, by the skin of our teeth, we were like, we don't really want to stop doing this, so just carried on.
Yeah.
But luckily, you know...
What drew you to the... I mean, Tom's been a guest in the Edinburgh Fringe podcast. We may have heard that one.
Yes.
What drew you specifically to those two guys? So you do work very well together. You've got a very similar... I mean, you've got a similar idea of what comedy should be, but not necessarily the same approach, I would say, necessarily.
Yeah, we're all quite different, I think. But like the same... Laugh at the same things, I think. So, I don't know, there was a sort of... We found each other in an improvised comedy show in Edinburgh University called The Improverts and met making each other laugh in a room. So that was sort of quite a nice introduction, really. People who I enjoyed making laugh were busy.
Right. So, can I ask about The Improverts?
Yeah.
Is it meant to be a pun on perverts?
That's right.
Yeah, okay.
They've combined the word improvisation with pervert.
I mean, it doesn't quite work as a pun on perverts.
I think it's a pun on introverts, really.
Okay, introverts.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't invent it.
No, I know. Yeah.
But it's had some good people through it. You know, Miles Jupp was there when I was there, and that's it.
I mean, people who do impro are never... they're always extroverts.
Is that true?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think people who are drawn to improvisation like rules.
Yeah.
But if they get the rules right, they are definitely funny.
Yeah.
And you can't deny that.
There's a lot of bad impro, right? There's
an
ton
enormous
of bad
amount.
Stuff.
So I don't know if you've experienced improvisation at all. There was Whose Line Is It Anyway was the big show in the 80s and 90s. But there's basically, it's a bit like a cult where people come and they try improv for themselves. And they're like, this is brilliant. You're saying yes and to everybody and everyone's building together and it's all fun. And they immediately go out and start their own shows. And what I say to people is that I think everyone should go and dance. I think dancing is quite therapeutic and good for people. I think, you know, go have a dance. You'll have a good time. I don't think everyone, after having one lesson, should charge others money to watch them dance. And that is the problem with improvisation, sadly. Yeah. People get so excited. They just go, I'm a professional now. So it's all shit. And it means that people go once and then go, no, it's not for me.
Yeah. Although the people who are good at it are really, I mean, they're ostentatious. I've had a couple of the guys from that show on and they're incredible. I mean, there's some of the good, and obviously Whose Line Is It Anyway? Yes. Tony Satry did a show. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tony's in.
He's in.
Yeah. He was waiting for his mention.
He's practicing his woman's voice.
But you know, sort of all comedy is improvised at some stage.
Sure.
This, you know what we're doing now?
Right.
This is improvised.
Yes.
And admittedly, quite a lot of dead time laugh wise.
Sure.
But,
sure.
But then.
But it'll edit together well.
It will be fantastic.
Sure.
We just do that one sentence. So then, but then the Penny Dreadfuls is a written.
Yeah.
It's always been a written thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we did an Edinburgh show and then got a radio series off the back of that. And then we got a second radio series and did another Edinburgh show. And then Radio 4 went, we hate you. and basically said, you'll never work here again. You're not a Radio 4 voice, was the sentence
really?
We got. And so that's why everything we've done since has gone through the drama department.
Okay.
Which is great, because when you do through the comedy department, they give you half an hour to write. And when you do it through drama, they give you an hour.
Yeah.
So it worked out in the end.
Yeah. So you're still doing, you do these sort of historically based, and you've had great, you've had Richard E. Grant on and he let you put it out.
That's right.
Yeah, so.
I don't know this.
he came on this and
he didn't let you put it out?
Didn't let me put it out.
Why? What did he say?
I mean, it's still a mystery to me. I was hoping you could get to the bottom of it.
No.
It was one of the best interviews I've ever done.
Right.
I think that might have been his problem.
Did you excel him? Is that the problem? Didn't want that to happen.
I mean, I'm always a little bit cheeky.
Sure.
But I think he seemed to be enjoying the cheekiness. I think I could have mentioned some of the good things he's done. But a bit more heavily. But he seemed to enjoy it. I don't think it was him. I hope it wasn't him. He seemed nice.
He seemed nice when I worked with him. It was him and Sally Hawkins were on that play. So there's two Oscar nominees in that particular play. Nonsense. And we haven't got any Oscars yet.
Not yet.
Not yet.
Humphrey might get one.
He might get one. Yeah. He lives over there. That's how it works. It's been good. I've done 9 of them now, and I'm writing the 10th one. And
so you used to write them as a threesome.
Yes.
And now it's just you.
It's just me. I had to edge the others out. It just wasn't working. When you are in a comedy double act or trio and you spend all of your time together and then, you know, it gets a bit like, When two-thirds of the team are very, very lazy, it gets incredibly frustrating. And so you go, why don't you just stay at home?
Yeah.
I've got this. And then they take you up on that offer. Yeah. And you're like, oh, okay.
Yeah. I mean, it's bad enough. I've been in a double act and that is bad enough. I was in a double act and two-thirds of us were really lazy. So I know the problem. Because you work together for you're still working together, right?
Yeah. What happens now is I write another play and then we ship Humphrey over in like a special crate from LA. He's 6'7", and he performs and then he goes back again and he's loses money on the deal because it's international flight compared with the fees that Radio 4 will pay.
Yes, so. I can imagine.
But it's very good of him to do that, I think. Tom's asleep outside the BBC anyway, and then it's all good. Yeah.
It's great. Let me ask you some emergency questions because I want to get these in. I'm going to ask you some. Oh, hello. I'm going to ask you some new ones. This is one that's come up recently. Who is the most famous or /surprising person you've ever been in a lift with that you haven't got into the lift with? that you've got into a lift and they've been in.
Well, hang on.
So most famous or surprising person.
They weren't with me.
You couldn't walk in with them, go, I was, but you encountered them in a lift.
Okay. Can I have two answers?
Yeah, you can.
Okay, one was Barry Cryer.
Okay.
Who I walked in and he was in the lift and he said, hello, I'm old. Which I thought was, that was quite nice.
I think it's good when they talk. It's quite rare that when the person talks. Yeah. But it's that, those are the best ones. When they
talk. Yeah. And then Paxman was the other one.
I've been in a lift with Paxman.
Have you?
Yeah.
He just sort of loiters around the lobby.
I think he does.
The first three times I went to the BBC, Paxman came out of the gents at the exact point I walked up the stairs.
Okay.
I was like, how often... The maths on that is mind-boggling. How often must he be in there for that to have happened three times in a row?
It could be irritable bowel syndrome he's got.
It might be. I mean, I wouldn't want to diagnose him on a podcast.
And then you got... Then you got into a lift with him after the...
Another time. The doors opened and there was... got into a lift.
His briefcase with one of my hands.
Really?
He didn't see. It was one of the first episodes of Fist of Fun, that's what I say, and it's completely true. I had to play the... I was playing the excited I'm at the BBC character, which I was... That's who I was.
Right.
And that happened, and I went, I touched his briefcase with one of my hands, and he never saw. So I'm glad he's still going around in lifts for the next generation of comedians to be excited about.
I've not seen him with a briefcase these days, though.
No,
he's given that up.
He has. Yeah, he's not. He's not. He's not doing as much as he just as university challenge now, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's sad.
He doesn't have any briefs anymore.
No.
That wasn't a pants joke, by the way. Okay. Literally, what a briefcase is for, okay. Right?
Yeah. It is, I guess.
Yeah.
This is another question that came out that has never been asked. Who is the most famous person you've asked to dance?
Oh, my God. I don't think I've ever asked anyone to dance in my life.
Really?
Yeah. Do you want to... No. What if they say no?
Has anyone asked you to dance?
Yeah.
Who?
No one famous. No one famous. No, I mean, when does that happen?
I don't know, when J.B. Johns got asked to dance or asked someone to dance, like Isabella Gellini or whatever.
So famous you don't even know who she is.
Isabella Gellini, I don't think it was even her. Let me have a look back.
Isabella Rossellini.
Let me have a look back. I never asked him about it, but I thought that would be a good emergency question. I was wrong. You know, I'll take the hit on that one.
Has anyone
he
asked
was, he was in a lift with Woody Allen.
That's good.
After, but they'd just been in the toilet. Sorry to people at home who had they'd just been in the toilets in next cubicles to each other, but sure. David Johns wasn't sure. But he was making a lot of noise. And then when Davy got off the lift, Woody Allen says, I heard you laughing at me. I bet that isn't true, but it's a great story. It's a great story. I'll ask you this question. If you could have any one item from any art gallery or museum and take it home and own it in the world... All the art galleries and museums in the world say we're going to give David one chance to take one thing home and it's his.
Yeah.
What one art piece of art or thing in a museum? It doesn't have to be expensive.
Well, it's not art. It could just be the security guard in the corner.
It could be that. But it could be like a museum that doesn't have art in it, like, you know, an artifact from the history or...
I'd quite like to take the glass pyramid from the Louvre so that everything gets wet.
Except you'd be dry.
I'd be fine.
You'd be dry under your glass pyramid.
I'd be sat on my sofa under it. With my TV inside, I think, rather than the other. There'd be quite a lot of distortion otherwise.
Yeah, I think you would need to be inside. People would,
That'd be nice.
I don't know if people would be able to see in to see you.
No, I've taken it back home. I've not just moved it sideways and then just set up shop in their courtyard.
Okay. That's good.
Yeah.
All right, back to you. You're doing a lot of. Let's talk about the podcast because you've embraced the world of podcasts, which I
been forced to, Richard.
Yeah, me too.
I mean, yeah, you probably understand this.
I do. But
when the phone doesn't ring anymore, pick up the podcast recording.
But
equipment.
A lot of people don't really use the medium, I don't think, in a very interesting way. And you're doing a variety of different things with podcasts. So you've done, you did one about films,
yes.
Film and Dango. What's the new one, the Fear podcast? Is this with you?
That's not mine, that's Sarah Morgan's.
But
because I live in York, I am now a guest on that when she's here next week.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And you also, of course, do Inside the Comedian.
Yes.
Which is a sort of parody of this.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yeah, which you claim is beyond parody.
Yeah.
It's not really this. It's not really this. Inside the Comedian, I interview comedians earnestly about their careers, but they're not allowed to tell the truth. So we have to just talk a load of old shit for the entire thing.
Yeah.
And it's you've done it.
I've done it.
It's good fun.
It's a sort of improvised comedy show. And it is fun to do, though listening to them, it feels to me sometimes the guests are unclear about what they're meant to be doing.
I couldn't have been clearer with my guests. Everything. You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. I couldn't be clearer. Just like, we're just talking a load. You know, talking crap, like just when you sort of just talk rubbish. We're doing that. And they're like, okay. And then they just tell me about their lives. I'm just like, that's not...
But it is a difficult thing. I mean, because you do so... I guess, as a comedian, you end up doing a lot of these interview shows where you do talk about yourself.
Yeah.
And so it's easy to sort of fall back. It's in front of an audience, your show, as well, which, again, is quite unusual, I think, for these interview shows.
Yeah.
I think that's what sets this apart from quite a lot of the other ones, is the audience is a big part of it, and I think it's true in yours as well. But the problem is, if people are trying to be entertaining and if they're improvising something and it's not working, then I feel they want to fall back.
They immediately know.
Yeah, they want to fall back on something that they know is real.
Yeah, but it's worked so far.
It's very good.
Somebody told me that what people really want in an interview format is for people to be emotionally genuine. And I was like, oh, I seem to have steered well clear of that by the entire format of the show, really.
But that's good, because there are way too many podcasts of people talking to each other. I mean, it's a crap idea.
Right.
Just two people.
Well, it's cheap, isn't it?
It's cheap. It's easy. I mean, it's cheap in every sense.
Yeah.
Artistically cheap.
You just need microphones the venues often have already. You just need two chairs.
And often the host is just relying on the guest being a funny person. He can just sit back and relax.
And sometimes, well, that's certainly what I do. So I just go, tell me a monologue about your life. I'll just sit here. But sometimes the guests have had food poisoning, and so that doesn't always work.
It does make it much more difficult.
A lot more difficult. Yeah. You know, I'm smiling a lot, but I'm dead inside, so that's not...
Has there been any incidents?
We're fine at the moment. Okay. Yeah, we're absolutely fine.
Because John Parkin's got to sit in that chair next week. And...
Sure.
I mean, to be honest, so many of his stories are going to involve shit that I think he deserves it. At least he'll have one more to add to his cavalcade of scatological reminiscences. It's going to be good. I can tell you that much. I mean, Karaoke Circus wasn't a podcast, but but that again was a kind of inventive use of a theatrical format.
Sure.
You were the drummer in Karaoke Circus.
Yeah, so this is a live band karaoke night where comedians would be invited to come sing songs, and then members of the audience could sign up as well. But we would often have a 24-piece orchestra as well. And so it's a live band, 24-piece orchestra, string section, brass, you know, a harp often, grand piano, and then some drunken fool will just come up and murder an absolutely beautiful sound.
Yes.
And that was part of the joy of it, really.
Yeah.
I mean, a lady's version of Fever will haunt me for the rest of my life. She seemed to have no understanding of rhythm or timing, just was reading the lyrics out. One of the rats from the Muppets. You get that reference?
Yes, I do.
Yeah. Whoopi Goldberg would teach the rats how to do music. Yes. Remember that? No.
Yeah.
No, anyway.
Maybe
it's very niche. Google it.
Okay. We will. That's very much what my podcast is for. And your wife plays the bass.
She does.
Did you meet doing Karaoke Circus, or were you together, and then your wife said, come, well, your girlfriend at the time said, come on in and drum in Karaoke Circus?
No, so what happened was we'd met as comedians, because she's a stand-up comedian and writer as well, and then so we knew each other, and then we got together after our first gig of doing Karaoke Circus. And then after our 10-year anniversary gig, we got married, which was very nice.
Yeah.
And none of the other members of the band came to the wedding. It was very weird.
Right.
It was very weird. It was, you know, you always have a couple of no-shows, and it was them.
Right.
I can't explain it. I don't have a story behind it. We hadn't wronged them in any way.
They might have been jealous. Maybe they were hoping for you or Danielle, one way or the other.
Maybe.
And then you two... ruined the band. You know, it's bad when John and Paul and the Beatles got off with each other. That ruined the Beatles, didn't it?
Sure.
So that really destroyed the Beatles.
What, That's what people always attribute it to.
Yes.
As soon as they started going out.
And you did it on day one, and then day one, and then, we've got into someone's fuck fest.
Yeah.
That wasn't what we did this for, but we will carry on for the next 10 years.
Yeah, we're now spectators on this sort of.
So who did? What was? Who were the sort of most surprising guests you had on that? Because you did have big name people who ended up doing that.
Yeah, who we had on? Tim Minchin's done it.
Wow.
And, a winner of MasterChef we had on. He was very good, actually. His name was Tim as well.
Okay.
Mostly Tim's.
It's good to have Tim's on.
Mostly Tim's.
Who was the worst celebrity?
Oh, that was you, Richard.
Was it me?
No, you weren't. I thought you were quite good. Did you do The Clash?
I did Orgasm Addict by the Buzzcocks.
That's right.
Or by Buzzcocks, if I'm going to be pedantic. And no that in there. And I also did, in Edinburgh, I attempted to do This Town Ain't Big Enough for the Both of Us by Sparks.
Yes.
Because I had a Hitler moustache.
That's right.
And it's a really hard song.
Yeah.
Really hard song. And I think I also did Down in the Tube Station at Midnight by The Jam as well.
That's right.
I did better at, but then the lyrics sheet was wrong and I knew it in my head and it confused because the lyrics sheet was wrong and then it went wrong. But you kind of wish you were there, don't you? I did. My favourite thing was seeing Andrew Collins do one and really destroy it. And then I was laughing. And then Michael, then I did Sparks and Michael Legg said, and then they all laughed at me as I did it really badly. So it's one of those things, isn't it? I mean, it's karaoke, though.
Yeah.
That is karaoke in its essence, isn't it?
It is. If you're too good, then people hate you.
Yeah.
You've got to be slightly shit, I think.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So I wanted to talk to you about a couple of your other acting roles.
Yep.
You were in Endeavour.
Yes.
The Morse prequel, is that?
That's right. It's
I didn't
in
see
the extended
this.
Morse universe.
Yeah.
Of Morse, Lewis, and Endeavour.
Yeah.
I play the television presenter Julian Callender.
Is this show?
I didn't pick it the name myself. I just auditioned to play him.
Yeah.
But I'm in a couple of episodes of that. So
yeah.
he crops up again, and I've pressured the writer to put me in again, but
okay.
As some sort of horrible BBC sexual predator.
Right.
So he's been hiding in plain sight the entire time.
Yeah.
I thought that would be.
This would be the kind of criminal of that week.
Yeah. I thought that would be fun.
But it's all set in the past, right? So they just would wave you through.
That's true.
Okay. Morse would go, yeah, come on, that's not a.
It's fine.
That's not really a crime, is it? If you're famous.
No. He knows Princess Anne.
I know someone else who knows Princess Anne, but we're going to talk about him more next week. So we'll wait till next week to talk about that. And SSGB, which was a book I really liked, because that's an exciting idea, SSGB.
It's an exciting idea. My experiences on SSGB were not fantastic.
No.
So I played a journalist who interviewed Sam Riley as he's walking into a building.
Right.
And my, I had one line, and it was shit.
Okay.
So it was something along the... It was setting up exposition, plot exposition, with a question mark at the end. It wasn't even a question. And I was like, when I was doing it, I was like, this is going to get cut. I know this is just, no, this is going to get cut. But then I got a call, and the director called me in to do ADR, which is additional dialogue recording, where you as soon as they see the back of your head, you can say words you didn't say on the day or whatever. And he brought me in to cut around me being in it. So my voice is in it and the back of my head is in it, but okay. My face is not in SSGB at all.
I read SSGB when I was about 13 years old on holiday in France.
Right.
I mean, it's the idea that the Nazis are in control of Britain. I mean, yeah. That's an impossible thing.
Impossible.
It's an impossible thing to imagine.
But a nice idea. Am I in the book?
Yeah.
A journalist arrived.
There's a journalist in the book.
I couldn't quite make out his face. Good fedora, though. Lovely fedora he had on him.
So what of your acting roles is your favourite? Is it one we've mentioned? You've done a fair few. It's interesting, isn't it? Because when you get into that, it's another guy who's now just blanked on his name. I know his name. Is Lucy Porter's husband, who we all know his
Justin
name.
Edwards.
Justin Edwards. We all know Justin Edwards. Yeah. He's a very good friend.
Very good friend of yours.
And I lived in Edinburgh with him for 4 years. So obviously I know... I know. I don't need you to tell me his name, David. So don't fucking jump in with that.
I'm sorry.
And make me look like a cunt.
I'm sorry.
He started out, you know, he started out doing lots of tiny, tiny little roles. And you'd see him in films every now and again in these tiny little roles. And then suddenly now he's doing quite big roles.
Yeah, he's now
an actor.
Yeah, he was exactly that. You sort of day players kind of thing. I mean, I don't know if you're aware of Justin, but he was... he's in Thor 2 when as there's a policeman and he goes, excuse me, you can't. And then Natalie Portman blasts him over a car and you never see him again. That's it. Just gets killed by her.
Yeah.
But her character is a murderer in those films and we need to remember that.
Okay.
Exactly. That's it. You do a lot of these sort of pretty thankless roles. The thing I've been recognised for the most and people have asked me about the most is being on episodes of Twirly Woos.
Right, yes, I've seen you.
Yeah.
I'd forgotten I've seen you on that.
Well, because people are forced by their children to watch them over and over and over again. Five episodes of Twirly Woos.
Say some of the things you had to do in Twirly Woos. I've definitely seen you do one.
So, one, I have to jump over puddles.
Yeah.
That was the most physically demanding acting role I've ever had.
How much preparation do you do that in terms of researching your character?
Well, yeah, no, I did. I method acted that one and jumped over puddles for a good 4 months before the shoot. Yeah. And then I had to wave a rattle at a baby.
Okay, yeah.
That might it be was worse. My baby, I think, in the story.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Oh, not in reality.
No, I didn't have a baby at the time. They had two babies on set, just in case one of them couldn't act. And...
Was there another guy as well, just in case you couldn't act?
No. No, they trusted me. They trusted me.
With a rattle.
They could always have got a stagehand to just put his hand up into frame as well and do it for me, if I was struggling with it, I think. But the first baby absolutely nailed it.
Yeah.
Like, adorable, laughing, giggling. And then they brought in the second baby and they were like, oh, the mum's here. Oh, we'll shoot it all again, but we know we've got it. And her baby just cried.
So, oh, man.
Yeah.
That's show business.
That is show that is business. Show business.
Oh, man. Miles Jupp started out on Ballamore.
Ballamore, that's it,
yeah.
We were at university together at the time, and he took a year out so that he could buy a house off his Ballamore money, basically. He was doing a divinity degree or something.
Yeah.
And he, just took a year out just to play an eccentric inventor on an island, and that buys you a house, apparently.
Yeah.
It's quite nice.
So did you get a house out of the Twirly Woos money?
Absolutely not, no.
No.
No. No, it's a buyout, as they call it. So when they repeat it, you don't get anything.
Wow, and they repeat it a lot.
They repeat it a lot, yeah.
They repeat generations of kids.
But I got to meet the Twirly Woos, so that was nice. You do get to meet them. Yeah, they're there on set. They are there on set.
Okay.
Yeah.
And what was Film Fandango? I leapt over that. That was a podcast that you did out of a radio show, right?
About... Yeah, so it was on Absolute Radio at first, and then we took it independent. But that was doing talking about films, old and new. So we would basically do a new release and something someone had recommended to us, and we did that weekly for 6 years, and it's all still up online somewhere.
So you're watching like a couple of films a
yeah,
week.
Which now that I've got a daughter, I've watched one film in the last 2 years,
right.
Possibly.
Yeah, it's difficult with that first. Although, and sometimes in that first year, you end up watching like loads of TV.
Maybe in the mornings, yeah. When you, yeah, yeah.
Well, or just like, well, I suppose it just depends how well they're sleeping, I suppose.
Did your sleep?
The first one. Oh, I can't really remember, but I think it feels like
it sounds like she didn't.
It feels like she slept quite quickly.
Right.
Whereas my second, since we've had two. That's why I can't remember anything.
Sure.
Because I haven't slept for 2 years.
No. When do you get to sleep again?
I don't know.
No, you can have a kip now if you
want. I might do, yeah. You shit yourself, I'll have a sleep. We'll see how that... It'll be like a podcast Waiting for Godot sort of thing going on.
Yeah. Sounds quite good.
That's sort of what Beckett would do if he was... And so that's finished, though?
Yeah, we finished that when we got pregnant, basically, because we knew we wouldn't have any time to... I did this podcast originally with my wife and then with a comedian called Marek Larwood
for
4 years.
Yeah.
We're not going to be able to watch films anymore. But I got to interview sort of A-list celebrities and everything.
Did
in
you?
The
yeah,
early
because
days.
Through Absolute. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know...
I mean, that's what I want, ideally, but, you know, I've got the bloke off twirly woos for now.
Right. We should have more famous friends.
Yeah, you, shit. But I did have
I interviewed
few.
Sean Bean about
did
it.
Did you?
He was very nice.
Wow.
About a film called Clear Skin, I think it was called. It was about a terrorist.
God, you know, there's a lot of shit films, aren't there?
Yeah, there's a lot of shit films. I mean,
there's a lot of films that just disappear. That's especially when you interview British actors.
Yeah.
You find out about a lot of films that you never even knew existed.
Sure.
That, you know, that do exist.
Yeah.
That you could watch if you wanted
right.
to.
Right, they're still out there.
I don't ever watch them.
No.
But it's incredible. Clear Skin,
I think it was called Clear Skin.
Right.
I think a clear skin is someone with no previous convictions of any kind, so they don't appear on their radar, you know. I don't think it was about a sort of clearasil-based detective.
That would have been good, though. I think I might have done better. A teenage detective who's hampered by his spots.
Played by Sean Bean in his 60s.
They can do a lot with...
CGI. I don't think they had the budget for that. I think it would have been more sellotape around the back of the face. But he was very sweet. He asked me where I was from, and I said, I'm from York. And he said... I've got a friend from York, Mark Addy. Do you know him?
Yeah.
I was like, no, we don't all know each other. I do now know him, though.
Yeah.
Mark Addy's nice.
Yeah.
Met Johnny Depp. He was very nice.
Wow, cool.
He was in a very dark room.
Okay.
So it might not have been him.
Okay. I thought you were going to say he was in a very dark place, which I thought, you know, we could have gotten into something interesting.
Sure.
I'm sure he has been in some dark places.
I'm sure
he has. But do you insist on being in a dark room? He might do.
Well, he's doing 6-minute interviews all day. So I imagine he just... I don't know. He just... It was a very dark... It was, you know...
See, that's the thing.
His people had made it dark.
But becoming like an actor of that... It's an interesting thing, isn't it? Because as an actor... You're striving towards that. To become Johnny Depp would be quite an achievement.
Sure.
You know, it literally becoming would be amazing. Well, but to be a
bizarre, a bizarre thing to wake up to.
Could be a film in itself. But to get to that level is what you want. And yet, you know, is he happy? And you have to do all this shit of travelling around, doing those awful junket things that we've all seen in Love Actually.
Sure.
Or whichever one it was. Was it Love Actually or was it,
it was Notting Hill.
And I bet they're not as fun as the ones in Notting Hill, but you don't get Hugh Grant coming in every now and again pretending he's...
He didn't come in once did in he? My entire time doing them. No. Bunton did. I found that weird. Emma Bunton was doing the interviewing for some radio show or whatever, and so was interviewing people genuinely less famous than Emma Bunton. Which was very odd.
That is weird.
I thought she was just sat in the green room.
But, you know, I think it's an odd thing with acting because we're both writers as well, comedians as well, performers as well. But it's that idea of striving to get somewhere with a job you have no real control over. And if you become successful, you sort of don't even really get that much. You end up having to do a lot of terrible films.
Right.
and a lot of terrible PR for terrible films. And you have to pretend you like them.
It sounds terrible. We should just stick with what we do.
Yeah, I'm gonna turn Hollywood down now. I've decided when they come knocking, looking for a perverted postman. When they make that film.
Didn't Kevin Costner make that film? Yeah. He did, didn't he? Maybe that was based on you.
Yeah, based on my life.
The postman.
Based on me playing perverted postman.
Yeah.
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 I think it was.
Good work. Yeah. Good work. Good. I'm going to ask you an emergency question because there was a little pause. That's what they're for. How are we doing? Everything all right?
Yeah, we're all fine.
It's Doctor Theatre, isn't it? I did a gig once where I had food poisoning so bad that I'd been puking and shitting myself like properly like minutes before I went on.
Sure.
I was lying on the floor like that before I went on, and then came on, did 10 minutes, absolutely fine, came off straight back down again. I don't think I could have done an hour.
No. Well, how long have we done?
We've done a fair amount. We've nearly contractually obliged. You could end.
That's all I'm aiming for.
You still get paid.
Oh, great.
You get paid 90% of your fee if we ended it now.
All right, okay.
But I'll ask you some emergency questions. I'll go from the early in the book because people like these.
What's wrong with the later pages of
the book? Well, no, nothing. It's just I don't really do the early ones anymore, but I come out on tour, you know, and it's like...
People want the greatest hits.
They want the hits.
Yeah.
So I don't do them in London, you know, where I have a more sophisticated audience. Of cunts, right? Am I right? Have you ever seen a ghost, David Reed? You live in the most haunted city in Europe. I want you to know that.
In Europe?
So
the more haunted city on another continent?
I don't know. All I know is that is the statistic that I have. York is the most haunted city.
Okay, I was doing karaoke circus at the 100 Club on Oxford Street. And I went into what they had, a tiny little backstage green room area. And there was a chair store cupboard that was like one door wide, but then went right back into the darkness, like a long corridor thing where they would just stack the chairs. And out of the corner of my eye, I saw a almost skeletally thin woman dressed in sort of white, strandy dress, muttering to herself in the corner, counting a rosary bead. I was like, fucking hell. And then I took a second look, and it was Bridget Christie, who was nervous about doing Kate Bush. So that's the only time I thought, and it was for a split second, I thought I'd seen a ghost.
Bridget Christie might be a ghost.
She might be a ghost. Yeah it's possible. Yeah. But, you know, she held the microphone later that evening, so I don't know if they can
do
that.
Some ghosts can probably do that.
I don't know.
Okay, I'll ask you this question, David. I'm not going to ask this one to John Parkin for fear of it, he'll punch me in the face. And I know the answer for John Parkin.
I think I know what's coming.
Have you ever tried to suck your own cock?
That is what they want.
That's
isn't
what
it?
They wanted. They'll go home happy now, regardless of what else happens. Even if you don't shit yourself, they'll still go home happy.
I genuinely had a think about this before coming out. It's to go, doing. And you know what? I think I've sort of looked at the the mechanics of it and not even bothered trying.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you want to give it a go tonight? This could be.
Not just when a moment everything's so
to stretch out.
So loose already. Yeah. I think that would be a mistake.
Okay.
For that reason and that reason alone, it would be a mistake.
Okay. and we'll go. What about? I mean, you know, you can answer this how you want. I sometimes don't ask the full question because the answer's obvious. Would you rather have a tit that dispenses talcum powder?
Mm.
See, people in London don't do that. That's what I'm saying.
No, they don't.
Or they're just more sophisticated and deader as a result.
Yeah.
I like the joy that these people get out of a man saying a thing they know he was going to say.
These people are having an evening out.
They're having a great time. I mean, I've been out on the streets of York tonight, and you're safer in here than you are out there.
Oh.
I've never seen as many hen nights in one place.
Yeah,
in my life.
They're all from Newcastle.
Yeah.
If you go to Newcastle on a Saturday night, it's empty.
Right.
They're all here.
Yeah. Would you rather have a tip that dispenses talcum powder or don't jump in and say yes yet?
Okay.
Because this might be better, and it is. A finger that can travel through time.
Well, obviously the finger that can travel through time.
Okay, so my subsidiary questions. What would you do if you had a finger that could travel through time, but only the finger?
Only the finger. Am I aware where it is?
Yes, you can see, and you can chew. You're saying, right, finger... There'll be the thing that makes you go...
Yep.
Finger, travel to blah, blah, blah. Wherever it is.
1066.
Yeah, 1066.
The Battle of Hastings.
Yeah. Or, you know, into the future. Or into the future. Right. Or into the, you can do the present. That is, not many people choose it. Cause...
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I guess you could do the present somewhere else.
Sure.
Because I'm not saying you have to be in, you know... The finger travels in time and space, which you would have to, because the Earth has moved a long way since...
Otherwise,
1066.
Your power is to get a very cold finger.
Yeah, just frozen off. Ah!
I wish I had the talcum powder.
What would you, if the finger didn't go into space, but travelled in time and space?
Travelled in time and space.
What would you do with that finger, that ability?
Well, could I avert assassinations by tapping people on the shoulder just at the right moment?
Yes, I think you could.
Could I do that?
You just nudge the gun.
That's better. Shoot somebody else. That's what you want. Just nudge it to... Another innocent bystander is killed today in the presence of an American president.
You can put your finger up the barrel.
That's not going to help. That is just going to obliterate my finger, isn't it?
Probably.
I mean, I'm not a firearms guy, but no. I'm pretty sure if you put your finger up the barrel of a gun,
okay,
the bullet doesn't just bounce back.
I reckon if you wet the end of your finger and put it in someone's ear, that would stop them firing a gun. If that just happened, if you were just about to fire a gun, and then you go... Ah! Yeah. And I think that would give enough time for the person who is about to be assassinated not to be assassinated.
What an awesome responsibility. I mean, what if by changing the course of history, by, you know, JFK isn't assassinated or whoever, then things are even worse.
Yeah.
Then I have to try and undo everything I've done with only a finger.
Yeah. I think it's a one-time deal, so I think you've screwed it up.
Oh, really? I've screwed it all up.
Yeah, I mean, you won't exist if you save JFK, enough will change in history that David Reed does not exist.
And that's it done.
Yeah.
God.
Therefore, you would then not exist, and then JFK would be assassinated, so you'd be fine, and so on.
And so on, and round we go.
I won't, because everyone talks about going back and killing baby Hitler, right? That's the obvious thing to do with this power.
You think a finger's enough to kill a baby?
I think it is if you stuff it down their throat. I'm sure it would be. I've not tried, but I'm sure it would be.
Do you have the full force of your arm attached to the finger?
Yeah, up to an extent. That's...
It's not just sort of... The power to wiggle, that's not all you've got.
No, you can push.
You can shove it.
If it wasn't just the finger, has anyone ever done going back in time and saving Jesus from being crucified? Because I think that would be a really... I want to write a film about that. I just had that idea the other day, but someone must... Because that would be Jesus if you go, no, I need to do this.
This is sort of my entire thing.
Go, but Jesus, you're the best person who ever lived. I want to save you so you can do some more miracles. No, let me back on there.
I've said everything I want to say. I've got nothing left.
You're only 33,
There's no second
Jesus.
Album.
You're only 33. There's more to come. I wonder if anyone's ever thought of that. Because even going back and saving Jesus, the historical figure of Jesus.
Right.
But then if he never existed, if he didn't die... then Christianity wouldn't exist.
I mean, arguably, it still would have done.
No, it wouldn't.
It would, yeah, because, I mean, there might be Christians in this room, and I don't really want to offend them by getting into all of this, but
I want to offend them.
Okay. I looked into this once for a play. I wanted to write a play called The Incredible Jesus, and the idea was that he became the first sort of... the first big illusion sort of.
So you don't want to offend any Christians, right. But you're going to tell a much more offensive idea.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Exactly. But I looked into what we do know about the man that is true that I could then, you know, extrapolate from, and the answer is absolutely nothing. There's no evidence the man existed at all.
I think there's enough evidence he probably existed or someone...
Someone existed. Yeah, I think there's enough evidence someone existed.
Around that time, there was a bloke...
I'd put money on that.
He lived... Probably born in Bethlehem, probably lived around there, probably had a beard.
Probably.
So,
yeah.
I think if Jesus hadn't died, then Christianity wouldn't exist. Paul is all about him, the death.
Sure.
And Paul basically created Christianity.
He monetized it, didn't he? I don't think he made the merch.
Jesus wasn't that interested in being a Christian.
No.
He was really...
It didn't exist at the time.
He was really solidly, like, Jewish.
Right.
He was full-on Jewish. He was a bit annoyed about some of the Pharisees and stuff.
Sure.
But he wasn't trying to stop it. He was just trying to make them think again about what they were doing.
Right.
Which, if you were trying to create a new religion, why would you bother with that? Go, don't worry, Pharisees. You're out. I'm here now.
Right.
You're redundant. So it's Paul who created it. So I think if Jesus had survived, there'd be no Christianity. And then what would the world be then, David,
without Christianity? It'd just be a horror show, wouldn't it?
It would.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you can say what you like about Christianity, and
thank
it's
you.
Done a lot. Thank you. It's done a lot of terrible things.
Yeah.
But it's done a couple of good things as well.
Cliff Richard.
Yeah. Arguably.
Yeah. Christmas pudding.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Those are the main two.
Out of all the things at Christmas, the pudding. That's the best bit for
yeah.
you.
I think people would have given each other gifts anyway.
Yeah, maybe.
You know?
I asked the Archbishop of York to be a guest on this show.
Really?
That was one of his questions. So I had a few questions.
Would you have asked him if he's ever tried to suck his own cock?
I might ask if Jesus had ever tried to do it. Because I have respect for the Archbishop of York. Weird that he turned it down. So it's weird. I think he was busy.
Yeah.
They replied.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
What did they say?
They said no.
All right.
Okay. We've looked into you. And no, clearly he's not going to... I like him, old John.
Yeah? What do you like about him?
He seems like a good guy.
He's a good guy, yeah.
He's been here for a while, hasn't he? Up at York.
Yeah, yeah.
The old York...
The old York.
Just look myself in the face. The old Archbishop Rick of York.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
John Samantu.
Is that his name? Samantu?
I probably would have learnt his name if he was a guest.
I'm always picking up his cast-offs as well.
Yeah,
people try and book him and then he says no and then I get it.
Yeah. I did quite like the idea of him and John Parkin being on the same show.
You've never considered sort of Graham Nortoning it and just having a big sofa that people sort of slowly pile up on so they can join in with each other? So.
It would be good. Be so nice. You're a York City supporter.
I'm not as hardcore as you are.
Yeah,
you
know, I'm not that hardcore.
I Google them to see how they're doing every now and again, like a sort of worried mother.
Yeah.
But I've been to some games.
Yeah. I've been to some games. I'm not, you know, I don't really like football. Don't tell John Parkin
sure.
this, because he'll beat me up. I'm very worried about being beaten in the next podcast. But, because, you know, you can't be cheeky to a man who was called the Beast.
You can't.
That is the whole, his whole modus operandi. So I've got to be very respectful to him. I'm getting it all out now. But no, you know, it's been a terrible time, hasn't it, for York City? Any supporters in? They're all at the game.
But all at the game.
I mean, this season's been good, but it's been an awful time.
Yeah.
They were literally the worst football team in... What's quite interesting, they were literally were. They had the worst run of form of anyone, and they had the Football League thing, and it was sort of second bottom, but then that's because it didn't include all the non-league games that we then lost in that same season and then got relegated. This season, weirdly, York City are the only team in the... or any of the divisions that has not lost any single game in any competition.
Well, maybe they'll never lose again.
No, that's what I'm hoping.
Do a Leicester.
Yeah. Well, I think it's weird. It was the year that Leicester stole our bones.
Yeah.
That they won the Premiership.
Right,
and also
right.
the year that we were relegated out of the Football League. I believe I'm right in saying that. If not, it feels enough like that, it's going to become a fact.
Are you saying Richard III's bones decide all football? Is that how it works?
Yes.
I mean, so, I don't know a lot about football.
Only when he's not under a car park. When he's
yeah.
And only for 12 months after that period. And then he's magic for which other places. But the minute you bury him again, it all goes out the window. So we need to dig him up, take him back here, and then we'll win the Premiership.
We'll win it.
Yeah,
all right.
Good. Who's your favourite ever York City player?
I used to try and play Football Manager, the game, with York City. Impossible. You just learn that it's all about money and you go, oh, I can't possibly ever win anything with this team. But my favourite player was always Emmanuel Panther because of his name.
Yeah. There were some characters. Look, we've done more than we needed to do.
Great.
So that's good, isn't it? And you didn't poo yourself.
I didn't poo myself.
As far as I can tell.
Did you say that to all your guests, or is that just me?
Really,
it was both ends, Richard. We were risking, you know.
Did you? Because the last time I had food poisoning, I don't want to talk about this while you're still ill, but I'm going to.
Yeah, sure.
I had to be sick on my own diarrhea. I was had diarrhea first.
We've all been
and
there.
And then...
Right.
Had to be sick and then had to be sick on my own diarrhea, which is, and then I did, actually, I tell like, because the last time I did it the other way around, and that's
I did it the other way around.
It's much better that way around.
It is much better that way around.
It's much better.
Because you don't have to put your face into.
Yeah.
Into the smellier option.
It is. It's not as good. So I'm glad you had. Not as good. I'm glad you got the good kind of.
Yeah, I got it. At least I got it the right way round. Yeah. No, I'm very pleased with that. I felt I've learnt something for next time.
It's good. And what can we expect to see? Can the people of York come and see you doing something?
I will be a guest on any podcast visiting the city for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, you've got that sewn up.
We're doing The Fear for the Halloween weekend at York Theatre Royal next week.
Yes,
fantastic. And then, check out the Penny Dreadful stuff, I guess.
So what's the new Penny Dreadful one? Is that about Richard III?
I'm writing about Richard III and
use
Henry Tudor.
You can use the stuff about the football if you want.
I'll use that, yeah. It'll be mostly about how his bones decide football.
That's
what Henry Tudor wants to stop.
Well, thank you very much for coming in, despite your illness. I massively appreciate it. Ladies and gentlemen, David Reed!
Thank you.
Go and have a drink and a wee. We'll be back with a mix. Next week. Come back next week.
You have been listening to Rahalastapa with me, Rich Herring, and my guest, David Reed. Hope you're feeling better now, David. Thank you very much to Pest for providing the soundtrack that we are listening to right now. I'd like to thank everyone at the Grand Opera House York, what a delightful venue that was. Thank you to GoFasterStrike.com people, that's Chris Evans, not that one, all those guys. Thanks to you for listening. Please spread the word about this podcast if you enjoyed it. Just tell your friends and make them listen too. It will be good. I am indebted to my producer and tour manager, James Hingley. I don't think anyone noticed the mistake. I covered it quite well. I'm indebted to my series producer, Ben Walker. I'm also indebted to my executive producer, Jonathan Harden. We called him Jonathan Hardon on set all day, and it was great, because Harden sounds almost identical to Hardon, which is like an erect penis. And that is the funniest thing on earth! Thank you. This is a Sky Potato. I mean, really, can we put this credits out? Yeah, it seems we can. This is a Sky Potato Fuzz and GoFasterStrike.com production. Go to richtime.com/gig to find out all the exciting places that the Hellastama is coming in March, April, and beyond. It's London, Birmingham, and Norwich at the moment, but there'll be more to come. I love you. Take care, my friends.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Thanks for listening. Do come and see me on tour. richardherring.com/gigs is the easiest way to find out where I'm going. And gofasterstripe.com. You can buy books and downloads. And just tell your friends about the podcast. If you can't make it to the tour show, if you don't want to buy any products, then every time you listen to an advert, you're helping us make more podcasts with a very, very tiny micro payment. So thank you very much for that. I love you all. It's lovely to meet you on tour, by the way. Hello to everyone who said hello so far. I do come and say hello after the show if you enjoyed it, if you want to see me. That'd be nice. You can get a selfie. I don't care. I'm a selfie whore. All right, see you soon.